Welcome to the Badass CEO Podcast. This is Mimi McLean. I'm a mom of five, entrepreneur, Columbia Business School grad, CPA, and angel investor. And I'm here to share with you my passion for entrepreneurship. Throughout my career, I have met many incredible people who have started businesses, disrupted industries, persevered, and turned opportunity into success. Each episode, we will discuss what it takes to become and continue to be a badass CEO, directly from the entrepreneurs who have made it happen. If you're new in your career, dreaming about starting your own business, or already an entrepreneur, the Badass CEO Podcast is for you. I want to give you the drive and tools needed to succeed in following your dreams. Before I get started, I wanted to talk to you about accounting and bookkeeping. As you may know, I'm a CPA, and this is a topic that still makes my stomach turn. However, I found a company that does it all for you at a super reasonable price. They do your bookkeeping and tax returns with ease. I couldn't believe how easy it was to get my books up to date, actually, because they were a little behind, and how inexpensive it was, too. To learn more about it, go to thebadassceo.com/bench. With that link, you receive 30% off your first 3 months. So definitely check them out and save some stress this year. Hi, welcome back to the Badass CEO. This is Mimi. And today we have Michelle Reddick, and she's the founder and CEO of Bad Food Company, which offers better and delicious baked goods. Her products have no grains, no gluten, no GMOs, or no refined sugars. She makes starting a consumer packaged food company look easy. So if you're wanting to hear about how she did it and how she was able to get into 800 retail locations against the odds of the giant packaged food companies, this is the episode for you. She also did this while raising 4 children during the pandemic. To get your top 10 tips every entrepreneur should know, go to thebadassceo.com/tips. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to learn about your story about you starting Bad Food Company. So welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Can you just start us off by telling us like how you came up with the idea and how long you've been doing it for?
Yeah, it's actually an idea that goes back about 7 or 8 years. I went back to school when I was about 40 years old. And wanted to be a pastry chef since I was a teenager. My father thought it was a really bad career idea for women, for people who want to have a family. It was very male dominated, the food industry, and not family friendly and low pay and tough hours. And he was right about all of that. And I had a whole nother earlier career, but this was something that was just always a part of me. I love food. I love working in food, being in the kitchen. So I was just about 40 years old. I had 4 little kids and I decided to go back to culinary school and did that. Started working as a pastry chef. Really loved it. All of the things I said, long hours, not so family friendly, not great pay. But when you love something, you love it. And I started to get sick a lot and thought I was just exhausted with young kids at home and working a lot of hours and traveling in and out of the city from New Jersey. But ultimately, I was diagnosed with several autoimmune diseases and thought I would never work in the food industry again. But after about 8 months to a year of being really sick, I did tons of research and changed my entire lifestyle and diet. No grains, no refined sugar, minimal and specific dairy. Things that you hear so many other people talk about these days. But for me, it really helped. Within 48 hours, I started to see relief in my symptoms from ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And so when I started to feel better, I got back into the kitchen and started recreating not only things that I love, everything from, you know, regular food all the way to dessert, because as a pastry chef, I definitely love dessert, not just eating it, but the whole creation process of it. And I had four kids and I wanted them to grow up in a house that still had yummy smells coming from the kitchen and yummy, delicious treats and desserts and foods that they would look back on and say, oh, do you remember mom used to make this? Or for the holidays, we had that. So it was really important to me to try to find ways to recreate some of the things that I could no longer eat. And in doing that, I actually wound up opening a grain-free bakery, which I had for about 5 years right outside of New York City. And it was really awesome. It did really well. I used it to learn what customers wanted and liked and were interested in, and to really fine-tune recipes and get feedback every day from the customers who came in. But really, my goal was to bring it to as many people as possible, because I feel that a healthier diet, not only for people like me who needed it for health reasons, but for moms everywhere who have kids and want them to grow up to be healthy and who care about all the foods that they bring into their house, organic, healthy vegetables. It was really important to me to take that all the way through to really healthy, yummy, delicious desserts. So after about 5.5 years of running the bakery, I sat down with my family and my husband and I, and we decided to make the switch from a retail bakery into a wholesale consumer packaged good company that I now sell my cookies and brownies and granola all over the country. So this part of my career, that wholesale line has only been running, believe it or not, I launched in March of 2020 at the same time that that crazy little COVID issue popped up at the same time. But really, when people ask me, I can't say that I just started this year ago. I mean, this has been
Did you keep your store open or did you shut down your retail?
I shut down my retail store only because I was doing everything myself, and the wholesale business is a very difficult, involved business, and it would not have been possible for me to do both independently. And I already was juggling being a mom of four kids who were in, at that point, high school and college, and, you know, a wife. And I didn't know how many more hours of the day I could really find to run two full-time businesses. Right, and so we decided that the bigger opportunity to reach more people and do what I love on a larger scale was in the wholesale.
Now, how are you able to transition your baked goods from fresh to be able to have it packaged? Like, how do you keep them fresh?
So it's interesting. I don't use any preservatives at all, but I do use ingredients such as coconut flour, coconut oil, and honey, which are actually natural preservatives. So the shelf life on one of my products is 6 months, which I think is really awesome for what it is. But we definitely are not a preservative-filled cookie that could, you know, have a 2 year to infinity right. shelf life.
Yeah. And is there a difference in taste or like difference in product from what you had in the store to...
It's pretty similar. It is pretty similar. Same ingredients that I was using before. The one thing is that when the cookies are being pouched at the factory, they flush the bags before they're sealed with a nitrous flush that helps remove the oxygen and keep the air inside the bag very fresh. So, you know, that helps, but that's a very natural process. There's still no additives in the cookies. I like to say that the bad food company, which, just so you know, stands for better and delicious, which was something that I said at the bakery all the time. It's better for you and it's delicious. So when I moved into CPG, consumer packaged good, it just seemed like a really awesome brand name, the bad food company, the better and delicious food company.
So you make it sound so easy, but going into the consumer package industry is like going after, you know, the Goliath, the big behemoth. So tell me about that, because I mean, really, I'd love to kind of dissect that a little bit more, because it is so difficult. You're going against giants. And, you know, first of all, like, where did you find where to even make this stuff? And then what was your next step? Like, how do you even find out, like, am I going to go right into retailers? Am I going online? Like, what was your strategy?
Yeah. These are all questions that maybe had I really sat down and asked myself and thought about them, I might not have ever done this because they are actually really intimidating. But there are lots of co-packers in the country. Not all of them meet the requirements for everybody. I needed something very specific, dedicated gluten-free, but I also needed a facility that allowed nut flours. I wanted a facility that was kosher. So, I mean, when you're looking for these specific certifications and manufacturing processes, there are thousands and thousands of factories in the country, but finding the one that is right for you is actually a little bit like a needle in the haystack. But ultimately, I was able, just by researching and constantly reaching out, calling people. I have no issue to call somebody and ask questions. Typically, I find people are very helpful, and it's part of being in the industry, I think, because it is so hard that if you call people and ask questions or email them and ask questions, you just keep following, you know, that little pointer until you find it. But I did find a few different factories, and once you find a factory, you certainly ask them for lots of help and guidance in terms of, you know, who do they use for their pouches? And I found on Facebook that there are groups that I've become a part of that you can ask questions. So it did take a long time. From the time that I decided to move into the CPG wholesale world until the time I launched, took me about 6 months, maybe even a little bit longer. And of course, in hiring somebody to design the packaging and do your nutrition labeling and making sure that your statements on the package are, you know, okay, according to the FDA. So I had to hire a food scientist from university. So there are a lot of things to learn, but I actually really enjoyed that part of it. So as opposed to finding it scary, it's actually fun. You know, every day I feel like I learn something new, and every day I, you know, finish the day off and say, well, I didn't know that before, but now I do. So
that's fun.
Yeah, it's a hard industry. It really is. And as you said, there are a lot of very big giant players. And something that I've learned being in the industry now for a little over a year, it's not necessarily even about whether a buyer or a retailer likes my product, as much as they have a limited amount of space on the shelf. And so they have to use it wisely. And it is very, very hard as a new beginner brand starting out to compete with a brand, like you said, a giant, a Goliath, that they know will bring money in for the shelf space that they're giving it. So it's very hard to convince a buyer to give up some of that money-making shelf space to try a new brand. And that has been a challenge. But I am really fortunate that we've been able to launch mostly in the first quarter of this year. Last year was kind of a bust with COVID. A lot of buyers just shut down new product launches. But we're in about 800 stores in the first quarter of this year.
And we're in grocery stores, or what kind of stores?
Yeah, grocery stores. We're in Sprouts, we're at Wegmans, King's Supermarkets, Erewhon in LA, Better Health in Michigan.
Yeah, how did you do that? I mean, that's not easy to get into like an Erewhon. Like, how did you do that?
Not easy. Sending samples, emailing.
So you did it individually. You didn't hire somebody.
This has been a combination. I have hired a sales team, people who are more experienced and more seasoned and have the connections. But actually, all of my big accounts, Wegmans, Sprouts, those were things that I actually wound up getting on my own first. Last year, there was a huge food show in California, every year in Anaheim. It's the largest food show in the country. And it was actually the week that we went into lockdown. Lockdown, I think, started on a Friday, and the food show was supposed to be Tuesday through Saturday. And I was meeting with Sprouts. They have something that's really nice and generous. They have these 10-minute maker meetings where if you're a new brand and you meet certain qualifications, they'll give you 10 minutes of their time, and they schedule it. And so the funny story is I had my husband drive me, I think it was like 4:30 in the morning, to the airport. And when I got there, I thought, am I crazy to be getting on the plane and going like that? This is the hugest food show, and there's this crazy COVID virus going around, and who's going to go to a big room filled with thousands and thousands of people? What am I doing? So after my husband drove away, I walked in and I said, can I change my ticket? I'm not sure I want to go. And I postponed my flight till the next morning. And actually that night, the whole food show got canceled, but I still had a ticket. So I emailed Sprouts and I said, listen, I'd still like to have my 10 minutes with you. And I have a plane ticket and I'm willing to fly to Arizona to your corporate office and spend 10 minutes with you in Arizona. And shockingly, they said, okay. And so I did. I flew out there and I brought
that. That's the way you go. You couldn't just do like a Zoom.
I really wanted to go.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not going to lie. Like I got really lucky because this was my first pitch. And I flew out there. It was very funny. I took a super early morning flight and I brought a suitcase so that I could shower. I got a hotel room at the airport and I showered, put on my work clothes, practiced my pitch a few times, took a taxi to their corporate office with my suitcase, did my pitch. I was very lucky. They really liked the line, got in a taxi, flew home a few hours later. I mean, it was like a quick in, quick out, but I just would do anything that I could in order to get my product in front of a buyer. And I tried for a long time to get in front of the Wegmans buyer and reached out to everybody and anybody that I could find in the industry who might be able to connect me to her. I mean, that's really what you have to do when you're a new brand. And right, like I said, you're competing against really big brands and you learn to be creative and crafty and sleuthy and you have to be really determined and you have to have a thick skin because they say no a lot.
And do you get to use a distributor at all?
So I do actually. I'm super fortunate. The two biggest distributors in the country both chose my product to be a featured new brand. I've been really lucky that it's helped me open some doors because we're featured and highlighted and there are some better opportunities for the retail buyers choosing some of these featured new brands. So I was really lucky that my brand was chosen by both of them.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
And so tell me, like, have you financed this since the beginning or have you done a friends and family round?
I did a friends and family round. I have to say another just sort of lucky moment in my journey here. I had a customer who would come in often and I went over one day to introduce myself to him, because I knew that our daughters played field hockey together and went to the same camp. But he and I had never really met. I just knew who he was. And you know, being a shop owner in a small town, I walked over to say hello to him. And we started talking. And he said, you know, I'm in the food industry. And I think your product is really great. And there's a lot of opportunity. What you're doing is really becoming important in the future of the food industry. And let me help you. So he taught me, you know, a lot about how to put together the plan and help me approach friends and family and get some investors. So the bakery I had financed all on my own, and I was already selling to my local region of Whole Foods from the bakery and some other retailers. So I'd had a little bit of experience that I was able to at least sit in front of investors and say, I had the bakery, I was already selling some wholesale to retailers, and here's what I'd like to do. And this person has helped me put together the plan. So I did a friends and family round, and I was not able to raise everything that I was looking for, but I was able to raise enough to help me get off the ground. And we will probably have to go back and do another raise soon because I have been really lucky that we've gotten into a lot of stores and I've pitched a ton of stores at the beginning of this year now that buyers are opening up again. And I'm hoping that we'll start to see some pretty significant growth. And if so, you know, I need to figure out how to finance that.
Yeah, you need to pay for your inventory.
Yes, absolutely.
So now looking back, is there anything that you wish you knew from the beginning that you've learned?
Gosh, there's a lot that I wish I had known from the beginning. But at the same time, as much as I could say that today, I also think I would say no. I learn a lot by making mistakes or by experiencing things for myself. I don't learn as well when somebody just tells me something or teaches me something. So while I'm sure I could have saved some pain and bruising and I could have saved some money along the way if I had known different things, ultimately, I think it's better for me and better for the business that I've had to be scrappy and learn things the hard way and taken a few knocks along the road because it's taught me resiliency and how to think differently. And I learned it all very quickly because of COVID and because everything changed so quickly in ways that I could have never anticipated. So I think I'm okay and comfortable with how I started and what I learned and not knowing everything that I didn't know.
What would you say has been the hardest part?
I mean, for sure, the hardest part was COVID, which none of us could have predicted or controlled. Right. But short of COVID, the hardest part, I think, is really what I mentioned to you is learning how to be assertive and be very firm in my convictions when I'm presenting to buyers, because I am competing against really large, well-established, very moneyed companies. And I have to really prove why it's worth taking a gamble on me. And that is something that's challenging.
Yeah. Now, how many full-time employees do you have? Are you pretty much, you don't, you've been doing consulting. See, that's probably why I was going to waiting for a lot of people say it's staffing, you know, it's like it's employees, but because you didn't say that, that's why I was asking that, because the people say that's usually typically the hardest part.
It's really funny that you said that. If you had asked me that when I owned the bakery, hands down, I never hesitate. That was definitely the hardest part for so many reasons. I think one of the things that I love the most about what I'm doing now is that I work with contract employees. So I hire out so many of the things that bigger companies do in-house, my social media team, my branding and design team, my advertising team, my sales team. But the reality is, because you do this on a contract basis, as a small startup company who, you know, I'm only paying for a percentage of using them, they're not my full-time employee, I'm actually able to hire somebody at a better level because A, I'm not the only person employing them and paying them. I'm not utilizing them full time. And so it gives me access to people who are more experienced and really good at their job. And I think that's amazing. And for me, it's been much better than hiring in-house employees, because I couldn't even actually train them on some of these things. I've never done them before. So it's actually, for me, the best way to operate right now.
Now, are you planning on doing like a direct-to-consumer strategy?
So I have that as well, which was probably one of the most important things getting through COVID. I have a website. We do sell on Amazon, which we just launched recently. It was much harder to get on Amazon than previously because of COVID. They were so backlogged with companies trying to get on because everybody was living their life by ordering online. So it took us a long time to actually get on for D2C through Amazon, but we've actually had a really great reception on Amazon, our website. We've got a lot of customers from the bakery, but a lot of new customers that we've gotten through advertising, and I get tons of great feedback. So I'm happy to do the D2C because I get to hear from them in ways that I can't through the retailers.
That's a great idea. Now, how are you balancing it all? And you said you had four children. Is there any advice that you could give to other fellow mom entrepreneurs of any tips of how you're balancing it all? Is there any secrets or apps or anything that you're doing that's a good takeaway or lesson for somebody?
I'm not typically one to give advice because I feel like I'm not an expert in any of this, but I'll tell you a few things. You know, first and foremost, my family, my kids are the most important to me. And while I put them first, I also want them to be proud of me. So I work really hard at my business to make it successful and build something. So there's a balancing act there between, you know, me focusing on my kids and me focusing on my business. And I think they both are very important. Throughout COVID, it was really important as a mom to keep my family sort of held together. And it was a hard year. And we had lots of I have a daughter who was a senior in high school and a daughter who was in college who missed her semester abroad and a son who graduated college who couldn't find work because of the pandemic. You know, there were a lot of mom moments that were hard to juggle. But besides that, I think that the most important thing is as an entrepreneur and a business owner, it's really easy to let it consume you and take up all of your time. And it's important to make sure that you plan time to not be working. Whether it's with your kids or doing your own thing or whatever it is, it's really important to know that stepping away from it is actually better for you than letting it be with you from morning until night, which it is anyway. I mean, you're always thinking about it, but I think that was one thing that's important. And I just laugh when you say, what's the best app? When you said, you know, about the employees, I actually joke around that I do have one employee. She's the best employee I ever had in my whole life. And it's Siri, because I tell her to set reminders and take notes and set alarms. And I think she's awesome. Anything I tell her to do, and she does it. But I have learned to become like a Siri maven guru. Like, there is nothing that I can't figure out how to get Siri to manage for me. And
that's so amazing.
I laugh. I'm like, well, you know what? You make do with what you have, but it's not an app per se, but my phone is like really my best tool. Reminds me of appointments and calendar reminders and looking things up for me and answering questions. And I'm actually in love. I can't deny it.
I love that. Okay. So final question is, if you were going to give anybody who's thinking about starting a company or being an entrepreneur advice, what would it be?
I mean, that's an easy one. You have to do something you love, because it's hard and it's a lot of work and a lot of hours. It's not easy. And if you didn't love it and you don't love it, it's really hard to keep doing something every single day, facing rejection, making mistakes, you know, missing out on family things or doing things. You know, you have to really love what you're doing to go all in on that. And I do love what I'm doing. And as I mentioned, like, being in the food industry and working in food has just been something I've been passionate about since I was a kid and most of my life. So I do love what I'm doing, but being an entrepreneur is a very, very hard job. So you must be passionate about it and you must love what you're doing.
This has been amazing. Thank you so much, Michelle. I really appreciate your time and good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on The Badass CEO. To get your copy of the top 10 tips every entrepreneur should know, go to thebadassceo.com/tips. Also, please leave a review as it helps others find us. If you have any ideas or suggestions, I would love to hear them. So email me at mimi@thebadassceo.com. See you next week, and thank you for listening.